This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The TV series Arrested Development gave viewers and the movie industry a new appreciation of the series' star, Jason Bateman. Since the series ended in 2006, Bateman has had major roles in Hancock, Juno, and State of Play. He stars in the comedy Extract, which opens Labor Day weekend. Yesterday, we heard from the director, Mike Judge. Bateman plays the owner of a small factory making flavor extracts. His employees are eccentric losers, and he's trying to sell the factory. He has to stay so late at work, by the time he gets home, his wife is too tired to make love. He wants to have an affair, but doesn't want to hurt his wife. So his friend, a bartender played by Ben Affleck, who describes himself as an entrepreneur, spiritualist, and healer, makes this brilliant suggestion. Bateman should hire a gigolo to clean the pool and seduce his wife. Then she won't have the moral high ground when Bateman has an affair. After Affleck gives Bateman a Xanax that turns out to be a horse tranquilizer, Bateman agrees to the crazy plan. The young, attractive, and brainless gigolo is supposed to show up once at Bateman's home. Bateman is shocked to see he made a second appearance. In this scene, he calls the gigolo to find out why.
Hello?
Yeah, is this Brad?
Yeah.
What were you doing at my house today?
Oh, nothing.
Bull.
Look, don't worry about it, dude. I won't charge you for this one.
You had sex with my wife again?
Well, I figured we already did it once, so what's the big deal, right? Besides, I'm not gonna charge you.
You are gonna charge me, and I am gonna pay you because you are not gonna have sex with my wife for free, all right? Now listen, if I ever catch you anywhere near my house ever again, it's not gonna be great, all right?
That's a threat. Jason Bateman, welcome to Fresh Air. You play beleaguered very well. In this movie, everyone around you is a little crazy, and you're constantly beleaguered, and you're going a little crazy yourself. Do you like doing beleaguered?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's nothing really funny about somebody who can handle everything. So I try to find some of the flaws and holes and cracks and vulnerabilities in characters. I mean, usually the characters that are funniest to me are those that think they've got a lot more on the ball than they actually do. So this guy, I didn't have to search too far to find his flaws.
Did you get any interesting direction from Mike Judge, who has worked with actors but also has done a lot of animated work and is really familiar with voice work because of the actors that do the characters for his animations?
My experience with Mike was completely effortless. He's not a micromanager at all. He's got a very specific eye, and I think that he sort of he really stays out of people's way and encourages them to do what he's hired them to do.
I want to talk about a film that you made before Extract, and it's State of Play, which is based on a BBC television series, like a miniseries. And in this movie, Ben Affleck plays a congressman whose mistress is murdered. Russell Crowe is the investigative journalist who finds that the murderer is connected to political and corporate foul play. And you're a publicist that may be implicated, too. And in this scene, the journalist, Russell Crowe, has taken you to a motel room where he's interviewing you, more like interrogating you, and he's secretly videotaping it. You're refusing to give up any information.
Compensate me, okay?
Okay, so you want to be paid to help solve Sonia's murder?
Save it, all right? I'm in PR. I know a little bit about phrasing questions, so why don't you try phrasing it like this? Would I like to be paid for helping you get a book deal?
Nobody's here for a book deal.
Really? Everybody wants a book deal, and I'd like my cut, okay? That's just fair.
When did you meet Sonia?
Compensation.
We came here to talk, Dominic.
And you know what else? I'm the talent, and I don't like the vibe, so why don't you change that up, okay?
It's a non-smoking room.
Under your name.
Okay, and then later in the scene, in this part of the interrogation, you're trying to be the one in control. But a little further down the line, you have lost control. Russell Crowe has broken you, and you're starting to confess everything that's happened.
And so I get a call. I got to go down to a street corner. I got to buy a magazine. I got to meet some new guy. This guy, you know, he's some hardcore, thick-neck, corn-fed, Navy SEAL-looking guy, you know? And he's all up in my face, scaring the hell out of me because he's pissed off and...
When was this?
This is like a month ago. You know, he's pissed off because Sonya's not giving him anything anymore.
What did he want you to do about it?
He wants me to fix it. He wants me to fix it like one of my hair dryers.
Did you?
I tried. I called. She wouldn't take my call. I go over there. I try to talk to her. She's just crying.
Why is she crying? She's scared. Somebody's after her.
No, she's crying because of Collins. She was in love with him, and she was pregnant. And she didn't tell him. She didn't tell him, and, you know, she's petrified that he's going to find out what she did, and then he's not going to want her, and he's not going to want the baby, and she got so wrecked about it that she burned thousands of dollars for the paychecks. Who does that? I try to get her to just relax and think about the publicity or think about an abortion or think about, you know, words. Just keep your word. What about how your decisions are going to affect me? And then she's dead. You know, I hear it's a murder. And so I don't want anything more to do with this thing, you know? I'm just terrified, and I want to go someplace warm, and I want to come back to a clean slate, and you guys write your article and just get them off me. I'm nothing. I'm nothing to those guys.
Oh, you are so broken by the end of that scene. I just loved watching that move in that movie, how you went from like the arrogant, sleazy publicist to somebody who's just really like lost and broken. Can you talk a little bit about shooting that and the, like, you know, emotional change you had to put yourself through?
It was a really great part to play. And, you know, he was, a fetish club promoter. He was bisexual. He was an OxyContin addict. It was everything that you would want. In a character, you know, it certainly wasn't boring. So, I was lucky that they went with me for that, because I'm certainly not known for stuff like that, at least not in my public life. The weekends are another story, but the getting to sort of that, I guess that emotional place at the end was, a result of the script, the story, and also the fact that, you know, he's popping pills throughout that sequence, and he's drinking, and so, I don't know. I was really, really, really happy with it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jason Bateman, and he's starring in the new movie Extract, a comedy which opens Labor Day weekend. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll be back, and we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jason Bateman, and he's starring in the new comedy Extract. It opens Labor Day weekend. What are your very first memories of being directed?
the story that pops into my head is I was Little House on the Prairie was one of my first sort of big gigs, and when I was 10 or 11, I was on that for a year, and one of the first few episodes that I had to do, I got shot. I walked in on a bank being robbed. And I remember reading that in the script and thinking, wow, I get to get shot by a gun and fall to the ground. And so that day came around to shoot that scene, no pun intended. And Michael Landon was directing that episode, as he did often. And so he yells action, and I run into the bank, and the gun goes off, bang, bang. And I threw my body against the wall so hard and slid down the wall and sort of, you know, shook a little bit on the ground as the last bits of life came out of my body. And I just thought that, oh my gosh, as my eyes were closed and just trying to stay still and not look like I was still breathing, I thought to myself, man, did you nail that? Boy, did you do a good job. And then I just remember, just hearing silence and then just a real quiet sort of from Michael Landon, okay, let's go ahead and cut the cameras. And then I opened up one eye and watched him sort of walk over to me, and he said, go ahead and sit up. And I sat up, and he took my hand in his hands. He goes, okay, we're going to start over, and I'm just going to need you to just fall out of frame, okay? On the next take, you're going to hear a couple of bangs, and then I just need you to just drop to your knees. And the camera doesn't see you when you hit the ground anymore. So it was a little humiliating, to say the least, but it was a good first, very gentle sort of, not chastising, but you know, it's, sometimes it's best not to do too much acting, you know.
Also early in Little House on the Prairie, you had to watch your parents get killed as their stagecoach overturns and rolls down a hill, leaving you orphaned.
You sound like a fan. You've seen that episode.
did you remember shooting that and what the director told you about how to cry? Was that the first time that you had to like cry on demand?
Actually, to get that part, when I auditioned for that part, I had to cry. There's really a theme in this interview. I had to cry when I auditioned for Michael Landon. And I just remember being really proud of myself that I was able to do that. I think it was the first time I had ever sort of asked myself to cry for no reason. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's become more difficult as I've gotten older, but it was difficult back then when I was 10 or 11. And so in that scene, when the parents go over the side of the cliff in a stagecoach, my sister and I, played by Missy Francis, we sort of have to take a few steps towards camera, and we're looking past camera and above camera, and we're supposed to be watching the stagecoach tumble down a 300-foot cliff with our parents inside of it and screaming and yelling and making up our own lines, you know. I mean, what do you say? No, Mom, Dad, no. It's, you know, do you yell? You don't yell stop. You don't yell stuff like, you know, hold on, or, I mean, well, you know, what do you do? So really the only thing to do was to sort of cry as hysterically as possible so that I didn't have to make up any lines. And luckily the tears came out. But that was tough, because obviously we're not looking at a stagecoach. We're looking at, you know, lights behind the camera and probably a truck or two, or, you know, some guy smoking a cigarette. And it was... There was some pretty complicated stuff for a 10-year-old to do on that, because it was definitely a drama, you know, it wasn't a comedy.
Why is it more difficult to cry as an adult actor?
I don't know. In my case, my head's just got more traffic in it now, you know. Things are more complicated, I guess, the older you get. You've got more stuff to think about. Not the least of which is, well, if you don't cry on this take, all those people that are standing behind the camera are going to start rolling their eyes, thinking, "Oh, are we ever going to get to lunch? I mean, we got to get this guy to cry. I mean, come on!" And then, of course, that makes it even more difficult. And so, it's a mess. So, I don't know. Although some years it's easier, and so it's like the almanac. You know, some years it's the rainy years, and some years, you know, the crops don't grow. But this year I've managed to cry a couple times in some stuff, and I don't know, maybe it's because I lost a dog, or maybe I'm just becoming a softie, but this year was good for the tears.
Not to dwell on Little House on the Prairie, but I want our listeners to hear you as a young actor, and we happen to have a clip from Little House on the Prairie. So this is when you're about 10 or 11, and in this scene, you've already been adopted by, you know, Michael Landon, because your parents were killed, and so... Your older brother you've taken his razor without his permission, and you've broken it. So you've actually stolen another one, and you're trying to pass it off as his in this scene. So here's Jason Bateman at around the age of 10 in Little House on the Prairie.
And I'll sound like a little girl in this, yes?
Well, kind of.
Girl?
Yeah, a little bit.
Hey, Albert, I found your razor.
What?
Yeah, I moved the wood box a little, and there it was.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I knew it'd turn up.
I thought it was gone for sure. I'm sorry for thinking you took it, James. I just didn't... This isn't mine.
What are you talking about? Of course it's your razor.
No, it isn't. I had a bad nick on the blade. I had to be careful of it. Look for yourself.
Brand new razor. Where'd you get it, James? James, I asked you a question. Where did you get this razor?
I didn't mean it, Pa. I broke Albert's razor by mistake. I wanted to make it right, but...
James, where did you get this razor? I want an answer now. You stole it. Get up to your room. Get ready for bed. Go on, now.
I love all that high drama music behind the scenes.
That doesn't make you cry. Nice little music swell. That'll get it done every time. And of course, I had to go upstairs, get ready for bed, which is code for get ready to get a beat down. Mr. Ingalls loved the spanking.
You know, I think a lot of actors and performers, people who are very famous, go through that this confusion about whether people like them for who they are in their public lives, like their character, or who they are in real life. Did you go through that because you started acting so young?
Well, not that specifically, but it was certainly challenging growing up. I was either ostracized in you know, junior high and in elementary school for being a weirdo actor, or there was jealousy, or there was just, you're not one of us, or, you know, it's tough enough, but when you're only spending half the year in the classroom and they're seeing you on television and then you show up, you know, midway through the year, it's not comfortable at all. So that wasn't great. And as far as trying to decipher, you know, legitimate and genuine, you know, when people really want to be with you and hang out with you, or whether they just want to hang out with you because you might be pseudo-famous, I don't know. I sort of just banked on my own ability to read people's sincerity. That never really bothered me. Plus, I've never really been, you know, I mean, I'm not Brad Pitt, for God's sakes. You know, I make a living, and I've got, you know, some people know me, but I get down the street just fine. No one bothers me.
You know, one of the problems a lot of child actors face is that they're successful when they're young, they get a series, and then it ends. And no one wants to hire them for roles after that. They become the answer to trivia questions, and they end up, who knows? I mean, because unless they're in the tabloids, we don't know where they end up. Were you worried that would happen to you, that the career that you always wanted since you were 10 would end when you were a teenager, and then you'd move on to something that was less interesting for you?
Yeah, less interesting, less exciting, didn't pay as much money. Yeah, that was a very, very, very clear and present danger throughout my entire childhood. And again, another reason never to get your kid into it, because you sort of end up buying the confidence and the attitude that you really need to be renting. And it's a very tenuous position. It's a very fickle business, and to think that it's going to last forever is naive at best. So, and that certainly was the case with me. Now, you know, I've acted pretty consistently for 30 years now, and even with that, there were some very painful, confusing, you know, dry periods, and you don't know when or if you're ever going to come out of it. And like I said earlier, there's only so much you can do to regenerate that relevance in the industry. And it's frustrating, because it always is just one job away. So you kind of also have to be in a constant ready position. You can never let that emotional investment atrophy. You have to be ready, literally, for the phone to ring, because the following day could be a big audition. And if you've let yourself sort of re-enter normalcy, you're going to then find yourself at that audition and have a bit of a panic, because, wait, what am I doing? I'm auditioning for a movie, and I'm not a movie actor. You know, you have to sort of stay in a position of not entitlement, but you just have to be ready. And you could go years and years and years without getting that job. So, as you can imagine, it's a very frustrating position to be in. And fortunately, right now, I'm in a position where my ambition is a match with my level of access right now, and that's rare.
My guest is Jason Bateman. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jason Bateman. He stars in the new movie Extract. His recent films include Hancock, Juno, and State of Play. He starred in the TV series Arrested Development. I want to play a scene from Arrested Development, and this is a scene in which your son, played by Michael Cera, has a crush on his ethics teacher, and at a parents' teacher's night, you've met the teacher, you've hit it off, and she has just spent the night with you. So here you are with your son, played by Michael Cera, the next morning.
Hey, George Michael. Wanted to talk to you about something before, but I didn't know if it was real, but now, your ethics teacher.
Yeah, I just made this for her.
Oh.
Yeah, she loves Saddam Hussein.
Well, I'm sure she doesn't love Saddam. I'm sure she is interested in him as a subject, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right, that's what I meant.
Great.
You know, I just wanted to make her something special to show that I care.
About the class?
No, I mean about her.
Oh.
I kind of love her.
You mean you love her, like she loves Saddam, right?
No, I mean like love her.
Oh. Oh.
Oh, hi. Hi, George Michael. I was just looking at this model home. I'm gonna go home and think about it.
Dad, what was she doing here? I mean, she wasn't.
Michael knew he had an ethical responsibility to tell his son the truth.
Yes. Your Uncle Job slept with her.
Says my guest Jason Bateman and Michael Cera in a scene from Arrested Development. I think it's fair to say that Arrested Development changed your career, changed the direction of your career.
Yeah.
What was your audition scene?
I don't know, but what I do remember is reading the script and guessing. Obviously, I guessed right about what Mitch Hurwitz needed from that character, which is, you know, someone that would really sort of ground all the eccentric characters that satellite around the character that I played, which was, you know, sort of the bland sort of center of the show, kind of the chicken breast on which you throw all this, you know, these saucy characters. And I remember him following me out of the audition room afterwards, and he said, hey, that was a great job in there. Now, you're auditioning for that other pilot that I'm producing tomorrow, right? Because he was producing a few different pilots that year, and I said, yeah. He said, but this one, right? This show, right? You like this show maybe better? Did you like the script better? I said, yeah. He said, yeah. He said, don't come in for that pilot tomorrow, for that other show. I said, okay. And so I guess what he was trying to do was not show that other network and that other group of creators me, because he wanted to save me for Arrested Development. Now, I could have, of course, still gone in on that show the following day. And that show was a show that really had a much, much better chance of getting on the air. It was more of a traditional multi-camera, you know, sitcom in front of a live audience. And this show, Arrested Development, was, as anyone who's ever seen the pilot, at least, was very left of center, to say the least, and probably wasn't going to make it on, but it was something that was more consistent with my comedic sensibilities and blah, blah, blah. So I'm glad that at that fork, I chose something that was a bit more consistent with my, I don't know, pardon the term, passion, as opposed to, you know, making a buck. And it's paid off quite nicely.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jason Bateman, and he's starring in the new movie Extract, which opens Labor Day weekend. It's a comedy. I should mention here, your wife is the daughter of Paul Anka. Did you know Paul Anka's records when you met her?
No, I mean, I didn't know his records. I knew that he was the man behind some very, very famous songs, you know, Put Your Head on My Shoulder and Puppy Love and My Way and all that stuff. So I certainly knew what I was dealing with, but did I have his albums? No.
Did he perform at your wedding?
Yeah, he did. He did perform at our wedding. He took the song My Way and he changed the words I think His Way, basically singing to me about what I was planning to do with and for his daughter, and what he hoped that I didn't do with and for his daughter. I think, as I recall, I was in a bit of a blackout. it was a bit nerve wracking that day.
Was the song funny?
Oh yeah. Well, he's an incredible performer. I think he started right about the same time I did, so he's been doing it even longer, and has got some very useful advice for me whenever I get the courage to ask him.
Well, Jason Bateman, great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Jason Bateman stars in the comedy Extract, which opens Labor Day weekend. His forthcoming films include Up in the Air, which premieres next month at the Toronto Film Festival, and Couples Retreat, which opens in October. His movie State of Play comes out on DVD next week.